Hi, welcome everyone to series two of the Rallycast. We've made it through our hibernation, come out the other side unscathed and enthusiastic. I'm John Paul Keeler, head of the solution consulting team, and joined by our two guests today, Josh Wirtz from Enride and Sakari Arvelo, who you should know from IP Rally. And we're going to be spending the next, not sure how much time, it depends on how long we can stretch the conversation. Having a chat about what is series two about the future. Imagine if, seeing if our guests can answer that question about anything, really, as long as it's aligned with AI. So without further ado, I want to introduce our first guest today, Josh, who's joining us from Helsinki as well. But maybe a quick introduction to the audience, John.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me. I want to start just by saying that kind of everything that we talk about here is going to be my personal view. It's not a representation of Enride. But as a background for me, I'm the head of intellectual property for Enride. Enride is a Swedish company that's about 7-8 years old now. And we focus on the electrification and automation of freight and logistics around the world. But I did want to say quickly at the beginning that I've known Sakke now for almost 15 years. So we both started in the same IP firm here in Helsinki. And when we talk about, you know, what will be in the future, when we look back, when we started Sakke, we had all of our patent cases in physical binders. And our assistants would print off emails and like clip them onto the front of a binder and hand them. And that's how you knew what you had to do next for your, you know, your work. And, you know, to go from that to you having created kind of one of the top AI patent tools around, and, you know, me working in electrification and automation of heavy duty vehicles, you know, in 15 years, it's pretty incredible.
I remember that very well, in particular because I was in charge of kind of leading the transition from the paper office to the paperless office, and it was a big project, I would say, and taught me quite a bit about how to manage transitions like this.
Exactly. So the past 15 years were kind of the digitization in IP, right? And I guess the next 15 are going to be the automation, right?
Yeah, I think like the paperless office thing was kind of the automating the procedural side of things and docketing and all that. And now at IP Rally, we look a little bit from a different angle, the substance related part, like how to understand the content of patents and automation related to that. So yeah, but interesting memory. And it's good to think about the past a little bit when to see what kind of changes there have been in the not so distant future, to kind of be able to imagine that what will the future in 15 years look like. Yeah, interesting.
Exactly. So really cool to be here.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, Josh, great to have you. And it is interesting to kind of start the thought with the past, because even 15 years ago, or even 20 years ago, or 5 years ago, AI was not seen as what it was seen maybe 5 weeks ago, let alone 5 months ago, and kind of the progression of the industry and the thought process, which kind of brings us to today's topic, I think Sakke doesn't need much introduction. Hopefully you've seen enough of him in the previous content we've done, but Sakke, just a quick hello from yourself too.
Yeah, nice to be here. I think this is my second Rallycast. Thanks for inviting me again, JP. Yeah, I started to work in the IP field actually pretty exactly 20 years ago as a patent attorney in the company just mentioned. Now the last, and before that I studied physics, but now the last 7-8 years I've been looking at this industry from the software and AI angle, so to say, and tackling the next interesting things, I would say, and looking at the future very curiously.
Yeah, and I'm excited about what we're able to do. But I think the next lead up in this conversation, I'm really keen actually to breach this topic with the both of you. And I think it has to do, and what I would like to kind of discuss today is the transparency aspect of AI. I was at a conference in Washington, D.C. recently discussing the regulatory impact of AI when it comes to patent filing, the impact of AI when it comes to certain industries getting ahead in terms of crunching numbers that would have taken thousands of human hours to do, you could do in minutes with certain tools. At what point is AI supported an invention? And they brought it back to the, remember 15 years ago when we had autocorrect. Is autocorrect considered to be AI? And then when you take a step back and you look at it, you're like, okay, but what actually is happening to deliver this AI? And certain conversations about the ethics of what training data is used, the AI, the EU AI Act has a lot around, you know, certain thresholds being met and computing to then have to disclose what it is that you're doing in a sense of that and training data that goes into these models. So my question to you, Josh, would be, finish a sentence. Imagine if.
Yeah, I think imagine if, for me, we really understood what was happening within AI. And I think you give a really nice intro into the topic where kind of what is AI? Does it even exist? Is it just a continuation of machine learning, which is just a continuation of algorithms, which is just a continuation of mathematics? Or is it something that really is new and unique? And when I look at it, I see one of the things that is unique about AI is this lack of transparency in a lot of cases where you simply are taking large amounts of training data, building up a model, and then relying on the outcome of that. And it's possible to kind of fact check the outcome. But if that outcome is wrong, or if it's not exactly what you want, it can be really difficult to modify that. And to try to understand it. And for us, for autonomous driving, there's been this push now to integrate AI into the decision-making tree for autonomous vehicles. And one of the problems you get is when you're trying to build a safety case around the use of AI for something as important as an autonomous driving system for a vehicle, when a vehicle makes a wrong turn, that's one thing, and you want to understand why it made the wrong turn so you could go the right direction. But when that wrong input and that wrong turn actually results in harm, results in a vehicle hitting a wall or a pedestrian, and you can't really explain why that happened, you just say, okay, we used AI in this decision-making tree, and the model took in, based off of all of its training data, the scene in front of it, and it came out to this decision that it should turn right when a human driver would naturally turn left or would take some other action. It's really difficult to build that safety case. So for me, where I really want to see this technology used in a sustainable way going forward, it's really about what if we actually understood what was happening in this black box that we call AI, so that we can really get it to do for us what we need to do, and we can actually improve it in a structured way.
Yeah, no, good. And Sake, same question to you. Finish the sentence and the phrase. Imagine if.
Yeah, now I think, in particular, now that Josh from the times when I kind of got the first kind of sparks to this combining AI and patents, I need to answer that. Imagine if I would know the patent landscape a little bit better, at least whenever I need instantaneously. Because that was kind of the original question that I got me a little bit frustrated as a patent attorney, that what if I knew the prior art space a little bit better, I could probably do my work a little bit better and provide more value for the customer and draft better patent applications, save some money in the future. And then when a prior art, piece of prior art that is relevant comes after 3 or 4 years from a foreign patent office, then it's kind of a little bit frustrating that, is it really so that I couldn't know this when I drafted the patent application? Was it really so hard? Didn't I really have the time and the tools to do that? And those questions were kind of the initial sparks for IP Rally. But that actually then takes us also to the transparency aspect, in a way that back then there was some kind of disappointment with the back then semantic search tools and AI, if you can call them AI back then. But anyway, there was kind of the solutions back then didn't really in the promises. And then I think the key that we have needed to pay a lot of attention to is this transparency of AI, both because the users need to be able to build the trust to the AI and understand a little bit better what it does, but also for our internal team, kind of they need to understand better what the AI does in order to be able to take the next steps and see where the bottlenecks are and so on. So I think this transparency is very important in many respects. Having said this, it's a super difficult topic also.
Yeah. I mean, I think for searching, it's interesting because when your system works, when IP Rally works, and I put in a question, a description of my invention, and it returns really relevant prior art, that's great. And maybe at that point, I don't need to understand why it found those documents, right? But if I put my invention in and it doesn't return good prior art, then I have this question in my head of, okay, is it because there isn't prior art and I should really go forward with this? Or is it because the tool didn't understand my inputs? And is that a problem with how I had inputs, or is that a problem with how the system is understanding me? And I think that's a question, right, you can't really answer without some sort of transparency in your system.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's sometimes the value, just sometimes you need to gradually develop your kind of trust and understanding and see where it does work, where it doesn't work, and there the transparency is key. By the way, there's an interesting thing that I would like to ask you, Josh, like with patents, if I think problematics is a little bit different than with patent automation than transportation automation, because with patents, you can always give the AI a kind of a try. And if it doesn't work, then okay, it didn't work this time. But with in your industry, it doesn't work like that. You really need to be confident when using, or how do you see this?
Yeah, I mean, so thankfully we rely on a lot of simulation. So in that sense, you know, we can run a lot of simulations with an AI component in our autonomous driving stack. And I mean, it's really difficult to get the miles or kilometers driven to test a system in real life. So simulation is important with or without AI. But with that said, you know, I remember one of the first things, kind of my first mentor in IP said to me at the patent office when I was an examiner was, you know, nobody's living or dying based off this patent. If you get this patent thing really, really wrong, nobody dies.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the risk profile is definitely different. And when you come into an autonomous drive program, if you get it wrong, somebody most likely, you know, will be injured. And the risk of death is quite high. So, you know, you do need to put a higher degree of emphasis on the safety case from that aspect. But the second aspect where it gets even more challenging is when you look at a lot of smaller autonomous projects for autonomous vehicles, you can build a really convincing proof of concept, and you can build a really convincing autonomous drive stack that works a lot of the time. But when you want to scale that up so that it can be in every car, in every Tesla, in every BMW, at that point, you can't have something in that vehicle that you don't understand. I mean, then it becomes really dangerous at scale. So it's one of those things where a lot of autonomous programs right now are very kind of low scale, low deployments. And so even now we're able to take more risks. But if we really want this technology to take off, then you have to understand everything that's happening in the situation, every decision that's being made.
Mm. Yeah, I can imagine that it's next level challenge in your industry.
Yeah, and I think it's good to segue into kind of the core of the discussion. I think taken away from the two responses of imagine if, let's focus on that transparency or black box nature. I think we have two really good pseudo examples, in the sense that they're so different in what Sake was saying. When it comes to, you know, kind of IP Rally patent searching, you just need to disclose how you found those documents or how you went to find those documents. And luckily with IP Rally, we disclose the graph and let you manipulate it. So transparency is important in that sense. But Josh, we were kind of discussing, and ironically, one of the subjects I nerded out in probably pre-pandemic 2018, 2019 is the ethics of autonomous vehicles and decision-making. I know there's that article from the New Yorker, the study on driverless car ethics, where they took a university study of, I think, a few million people around the world and put the trolley conundrum ahead of them and said, what decision will you make? And then they found out, and I'll share a reference to this article to those listening in, around that every region has a different cultural or social view of who should be saved in that situation. So what impact does it have in the sense of the transparent versus open access, in a sense of, I don't know, maybe getting more access to testing, maybe some barriers, maybe let us know about those barriers. I'm just kind of curious where transparency is impacting. And then we can get into a conversation about in the patent space as well with Sake, kind of tie around, but be really curious to get your view on that impact of transparency when it comes to autonomous vehicles and AI.
Yeah, so it's a multifaceted issue. The first side is what should happen. And if I'm not mistaken, there's some resolution over this. And at least from a decision of should a vehicle prioritize the occupants of the vehicle that's driving over another vehicle or another person, pedestrian, it's pretty well recognized that the system shouldn't make that decision. That basically we have the computational power to make a best analysis, to put kind of a cost on each action and to choose the lowest cost, however you want to rank that. So that's kind of how it should be. The problem that I see with putting any black box technology in that decision-making tree is twofold. One is, if it's a true black box, we don't really know what's happening, and we don't know if there's a bias. You know, we talk a lot about training data. If you train data with a heavy bias, you're going to get a biased output. And if you're not careful about that, you might not understand it. The second piece, which, you know, maybe is a little bit more nefarious, is if you accept a black box in the decision-making tree, then there's always this opportunity for abusing that, where maybe you have a smaller car brand with their autonomous stack that actually prioritizes the safety of the occupants of that vehicle. And they put that into this black box and they say, hey, we didn't, you know, we don't do that. But they do, because it's acceptable to have this black box, and you only find out after quite a few instances. So you get a high enough data set that actually there is this bias. And then was that bias intentional or not? So you create a lot of these problems where I think what we want as humans, right, is to be treated fairly. And I think when it comes to how an autonomous vehicle is going to treat us, when we're walking around, when we're driving on the street in our own car with an autonomous vehicle on the road, I think we all just want to be treated fairly. And we don't want it to prioritize us based off of any metric, like race or the type of car that we have. And I think an interesting video that I saw not too long ago is actually a Tesla driving down the street. I think it was in Italy, and a guy tripped and fell into the road, and the Tesla automatically swerved to avoid the falling pedestrian and rammed head on into a car coming the other way, and kind of caused a lot of damage to this car, which kind of wasn't involved. But the Tesla made a decision that the pedestrian falling in had a higher chance of being really badly hurt than this person in a car that has airbags, has a big safety net built around it. So as long as that decision was made transparently and we can go back and understand why it made that, I think it's good. But if that was a black box decision, then you start to worry.
Yeah, I remember I actually saw that. That was, I think, in the last week, that video. And do you believe that that's a regional decision to be made, that it's a universal? What if certain markets would maybe require? How do you get through the tape behind, you know, that kind of regional decision making and ensuring that certain governments don't get their hands on it, if that's a thing? Like, it's how truly transparent can AI be?
I hope it can be very transparent, or I hope it can be used in places where that risk is, you can mitigate it. If you use AI to simply identify objects in a video stream, but it's not being used for the decision-making process, that's one thing. But, you know, I struggle with this fact of discrimination, right? Like, can you kind of discriminate in one place and be fair and not discriminate in another? I don't think that you can. I think, you know, that the activities of that system either do disadvantage a certain group, or they act fair for, in kind of however you define fairness, globally. So I think the vehicle and these autonomous systems should be making the same decision, at each stop along the way, everywhere in the world. And if we agree on kind of a cost framework for each thing, so that every system, regardless of who's developing it, is kind of assigning the same kind of cost function, and there's accountability for that, then I think it's the closest we're going to have to a fair world.
One thing that came up in our pre-discussion was that, which also, by the way, has like an analogy in the patent automation space, is that you mentioned, Enright, you are kind of automating those frequently driven routes, and kind of try to tackle that problem first. Is that purely because of like commercial reasons, the big money is on those routes, or is it also like risk management that there are less surprising situations coming on those routes, or what's the thought process behind that?
Yeah, so Enright, we were one of the world's largest purchasers of heavy-duty battery electric vehicles that have a driver in them. And a lot of our business model is about electrifying heavy-duty fleets. Just like, you know, we had to start 15 years ago digitizing IP management before we even had a shot at automating and adding AI tools. And so this first step is electrification. And what we do, we operate in this middle mile section. So we're usually delivering between a manufacturing facility and a warehouse, or a warehouse and a distribution center. And these facilities aren't moving. A truck's going to drive relatively the same route for several years. It's going to be taking the same goods with the same weight. We're going to understand the weather. And then on top of that, then we want to automate this process. We want to have autonomous vehicles, but there's no supplier we can go to buy that. So the business philosophy is, let's develop an autonomous solution and let's get things out there. Let's try. And I remember, Sakke, when you started talking about IP Rally some years ago, and I've had some touch points with you over the years. I think you had a similar philosophy, right? Where it was like, let's start with something that, you know, we have a good data set that we can trust. Let's build something and get it out there, something that can be useful. And once we prove that this thing conceptually can be useful, then it's easy to build off of it. And that's what we try to do with NRUD, where if we know we have this route and the problem of autonomy for that route is manageable, that, you know, either we know that the that our system can handle it, that the hardware is capable of handling this route, or in most cases where we understand we know we can handle most of it, 80% of what we have, but then we know we only need to develop this additional 20% in order to deploy a truck. And there, it's really one of the few ways that we can kind of actually get commercial deployed experience. Whereas if we look at an OEM that's trying to build an autonomous vehicle that they can sell to anybody, you know, Tesla, you buy your Tesla, you want to be free to take it everywhere and use it autonomously everywhere. That problem is really, really difficult. And I think everybody's, including Elon Musk, hasn't fully appreciated how difficult that problem is. So we're coming at it from this other side of, let's find a problem that's that we know is surmountable, that we really understand the problem. Let's develop to that. Let's deploy. Let's learn. And then let's find that next problem. So that's really a completely different commercial and development approach that separates us from a lot of the other autonomous projects.
Yeah, that was an interesting detail that I remember from our conversation, and kind of the, you already touched upon the analogy that I was after, like we also want to tackle those high volume cases, like a prior art searching. It's done millions of times in the world, and there is some reference data that we can use as training data, the novelty destroying references that the patent examiners have found. And there's also like a process established. So usually when you do like a prior art search, you start from planning, you do some preparations, you do the search, then you review the results and they generate the report. And it's a kind of a meaningful task also to split into these different sections, and you can tackle them one by one with the user kind of validating the first, like guiding the process, then maybe next level, like validating or approving it before moving to the next stage. And then maybe at some point you can build like a trustworthy enough, like a pipeline where the computer can do the decisions then, and then you get the whole flow done. There's still a little bit work to done before that, but I think it's a meaningful problem to solve, like volume wise, and then also it can be split into these different subtasks.
Yeah, and I think in a sense of the difference between the two industries, it seems to be similarities. And Sake, I'd like to ask you on your imaginative, when it comes to, from the beginning, the decision to make IP Rally an open book in a sense of disclosing the graphs, disclosing the process of the graph, obviously filing patents around it, full disclosure on how that process goes, to what you see in a sense of going back to AI, the impact of the ability to do some of the things that you were just saying now, that automation, the kind of next level step. What is your view of the transparency of AI and the ability then to match what you foresee?
Well, we currently split things into two. So the AI that we develop ourselves from scratch, which is kind of the graph AI that's IP Rally is known for, and that we currently use to do the high quality search, and that is kind of what we control from the scratch, and we define what training data we use, we define how to approach the problem, and we also evaluate it based on certain metrics, that how well is it able to match with the examiner citations and so on. Kind of that's something that we do continuously and control. Then the second aspect is just generative AI boom that's been there for now 2 years since ChatGPT, and we also use that because it's really powerful in certain applications, in particular the patent review part. But there the problem is also like, how do I know that it's not hallucinating? How do we control that? And that's something that we also pay a lot of attention to. So we are, well, basically we are tuning the kind of the creativity levels of the models to zero so that it's deterministic. It always gives the same answer to the same question. And then we specifically instruct it to stick to the contents of each individual patent and tell it to not go beyond the disclosure. And then when it provides the answer, then you do some level of reasoning. And it's like a scientific debate whether this large language model can do reasoning at all, or is it just like apparent. But from the user's perspective, I would say that there is some level of reasoning that they can do, and it's helpful. And I think it's an interesting space, in particular now that this new chain of thought models and things like that are developing. So in a nutshell, irrespective of what kind of AI we're talking, like our own neural networks that we develop from scratch or then off-the-shelf models that we employ, transparency is an issue, and we want to somehow manage and control that.
Yeah, and I think, Josh, like, but in your space, end desire is just, again, just how these are your thoughts, your personal thoughts. These are my personal nerdiness, just making up a situation, but trying to compare software to apples to oranges, but maybe this will do the trick. But let's say a nefarious producer or somebody wants to offer a product, let's say a software for patent searching, and their end goal is not to find the most relevant document, but rather give a result to their users so they're happy. So they may code an environment and not disclose that it's actually taking you off a cliff because that's where it thinks that you want to go. Same with autonomous vehicles. Could a developer, somebody put into that black box a quick decision to be made so the user is happy, and the impact that has in the trust and confidence? How do you foresee the impact of, I guess, an industry where each player can go their own way, in a sense? Do they want to go black box? Do they want to openly disclose? But that's also an industry in the last 10 years that's created a lot of prior art as well. What impact do you see that it has in the ability to find relevant art? What's the quality of that art? Is that impacting in any way the opportunity to deliver transparent AI mechanism? How do you see that?
Yeah, so I think a lot of this comes back to trust. And I think we're in an age where, Sakya, you said it, that you are tuning the model algorithm to be deterministic and to lack creativity. That's something, and I think, this conversation we're having is part of building that transparency over the product, which is hopefully helping building some trust with anybody who's watching this and who's maybe a potential customer of yours. When you have a black box there, and even maybe more when, as a company or an organization, you're not being transparent, then it's difficult to have trust coming in. And we talk a lot about AI, and I think we talked about this before. How does data fit into this? So the question you asked, John, was interesting. My mind ran in a bit of a different way when it comes to being nefarious, which is if I'm entering my undisclosed inventions to a search program, and that then gets turned into something that I don't have control over, I'm putting a lot of trust in there, right? I'm drawn to, there was a case in the US where a lawyer had to file a motion in court, and he simply put kind of generally what he wanted into ChatGPT. And ChatGPT came out with a motion, and it was drafted perfectly how you would want it. And it had case law that was fantastic and met kind of everything that you could ever want out of case law supporting it. And he filed it with the court without ever fact checking. And the court came back and said, listen, like, you're quoting cases that don't exist. And the lawyer said, well, I mean, I asked ChatGPT if these cases existed, and it said yes. And so what happens now, let's say if we're going on this nefarious rabbit hole, you know, what happens if you have a company and it creates prior art, like really good prior art, and would publish it in that window between when I take my invention disclosure to try to search and do a novelty search, but now it knows what I'm trying to find and it can create perfect prior art and it can publish that. So how do I know? And maybe this isn't a question about transparency of kind of an AI system on its own, but it's a transparency of, you know, how are you handling my data? Is that data actually going out? Do you have control over the language model that you're using, over the AI that you're using? And I think all of this and everything we talked about before, like, do we want a vehicle to act fairly? It's about, do I trust being on the road around an autonomous vehicle? Do I trust somebody's software, somebody's tool, from these aspects of kind of data handling as well as from the output? So maybe that's where my mind goes.
Yeah, that's a valid input, but then it's also where my mind was, and that is the already existing art, like you said, that may have been created outside of a generative model. But the impact, let's say, and I guess it's also a question for me not knowing too much, is there a regulatory impact of getting approvals if you're not disclosing fully your model, et cetera? What kind of impact does this black box have in operations as well? Do you see that being something industry-wide that potentially is affecting progress?
I think it's undetermined at what effect it's going to have. I think it's quite new. My personal hope is that things are going to be regulated more heavily if you can't actually explain what you're doing. And I hope that, and again, it's trust, right? I mean, how do we build trust with regulators? How do we build trust with parliaments and elected officials? How do elected officials build trust with their constituents about allowing autonomous vehicles on the road, about allowing AI in patent filings or in anything else? There's a lot of fear going around. And I think it's really hard to dispel fear without knowledge, right? I mean, I think knowledge is, and transparency is one of the easiest ways that you can kind of walk people through and explain and, you know, assume that people are kind of intelligent enough to make a good decision for themselves when they have the information. But if you just, hey, listen, I've got this black box, I'm taking your data, trust me, we're doing everything right, and, you know, this thing always makes the right decision, it's really hard to trust.
And I guess this is a good segue, Saka, into what I wanted to ask you around, you know, the impact that AI and this trust has on some of the automations of the process. And I think we've done a good job at IP Rally of gaining our users' trust, which I'm assuming from early days, Saka, you probably saw this, what is happening with my data, what's happening with my input, how are these search results coming back? How would you say then the trust that we've built up and the ability of the existing AI, would, do you think, have an impact on the ability to implement some of the automation that you're imagining?
Well, I think that the transparency is in many levels like the prerequisite of many things, like Josh already mentioned, the data security aspects. And in particular there, I think that transparency is like necessary. We separate whenever we use like a model that is hosted by someone else and not controlled fully by us, we are super transparent about it, and we tell it. We even tell what model exactly we are using. So we want to take it to the to that level. And yeah, I think that's key. About regulations, I'm personally not a big fan of regulation in at least our industry, or it needs to be in proportion to the problem that you solve and the impacts. I'm just like, let's build useful applications and be transparent, and then the users will find their way to the most useful useful applications. I'm not speaking for transportation industry here, but just our industry. I think that the overregulation can kill a lot of useful things, and in particular in Europe, I'm a little bit worried that we are overregulating things in contrast with US and China, for example, and are left behind.
Yeah, it's been a topic, I think, especially in the last month and a half, where I've been hearing a lot more about the regulatory impact of AI, especially in patent filing. Not so much in the searching aspect, but the how much of a patent is actually derived from AI-induced research with kind of the automation of the mathematical process required to break down a specific sequence, for example. But it's good. I think it's really interesting to see it from two completely different points of view, but all kind of going down the same track, which is really, really neat. I've enjoyed the conversation for the last, 40 some minutes. It's absolutely flown by. But I wanted to kind of finish off a little bit looking outside of our industries and get some kind of closing reflections on the main topic, just overall, when it comes to, just any industry, let alone ours. So what if we did understand how AI does what it does? What would you say, and I'll ask you, Josh, first, would be your final thoughts on kind of the benefits and challenges of making AI transparent throughout the process, and just any closing thoughts that you have on the subject?
Yeah, my main thought when it comes to AI in general is it's a really powerful tool, and it's an even more powerful tool when it's used for something that it's good at. And it's an even better tool when it's used in a way that's understood. I see so many risks involved with AI when it's just used without understanding it, when it's put in places where maybe it really shouldn't be put, or when training data has been used, which includes a lot of bias, and that's not accounted for or acknowledged in any way. We look at things like automated sentencing programs in the US, and you can take data and say, this cohort of people is really likely to commit offenses again, and it's better for the community to impose harsher sentences. But that data tends to be very biased. And if you don't acknowledge that, you're going to end up with just perpetuating this bias. And if you get to the point where there's no way to stand up for yourself, there's no way to kind of say, hey, I think this is wrong. How do you prove it? Well, maybe I prove it here and maybe I don't. And we lose trust because we just over rely on this AI model, which has more access to information than we can ever have, is, arguably smarter than most of us. We run into a lot of potential problems. So I think this is, I'm also extremely for a low regulation. And I agree with you, Saskia. Europe is struggling when it competes on a global stage because of its overregulation. But maybe when it comes to AI, I think we should still be a little bit more careful and lean in that direction.
Wonderful. Thank you. Saskia. Same question and closing thoughts.
Yeah. So how I see it, kind of with every big transition, people have different speed of adopting new technology, and that's perfectly fine. In our industry, we see kind of there's a lot of like historical load in how you conduct patent searching, for example, and many people are kind of want to stay fully in control. And then for those people, it usually takes a little bit longer to adopt AI. Some are like, hey, I needed to be in control, but now I don't need to be in control. I can just take the output. And that's also perfectly fine. I think you can get there in both ways. And maybe you run into different types of questions depending on your personality. But I think nowadays we don't need to convince anyone that the AI is providing a lot of value in this industry. The question is that how do we deliver that value? And there I feel kind of responsibility of doing it as transparently and smoothly for the end users as possible.
Yeah, I think in the end, trust but verify. It's an old saying, but it really does go a long way. And me personally, I'm excited. I think having these sort of risks associated with it, and knowing that it's a global issue as well. It isn't just a European, North American, or Asia Pacific. It's, you know, every region now needs to embrace or decide. And I think this transparency is the best thing to go. So I hope the listeners and the watchers have found value out of today. You can get some takeaways from it. And we'll be catching you on some more episodes. This is the first recording. So really excited for series 2 of Rallycast. I want to thank Josh and Sakit for joining us today, remotely from Helsinki and from London. I want to thank everyone for joining us in this Rallycast episode 1 of series 2. And see you on the next one. Thank you, everyone.